Good morning. Please be seated. Just going to take 1 second to set up here. Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and welcome especially to the students who are here watching us. We're happy to have you. Today is May 8th. We have three cases on our oral calendar this morning. The first one is A23-1465, Daniel Wayne Siegfried versus Commissioner of Public Safety. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument, and counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. The podium goes up and down, as you may know. The proceedings are being recorded for an audio recording, which will be available later on our website. No other recordings have been authorized, so no other recordings are permitted. And when you begin your arguments, your principal arguments, please state the name and a party you represent for the record. And with that, counsel for appellant, we're ready for your argument.
Some difficulty sliding around here.
So. Take your time.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Matthew McGuire, Assistant Attorney General. I'm representing the appellant in this case, the Commissioner of Public Safety. Today, I'm here to ask this court to reverse the district court's order rescinding appellee's driver's license revocation. The district court's order should be reversed because the district court committed clear error when it concluded as a matter of law that an officer did not have reasonable articulable suspicion to stop appellee after he committed a lane line violation after exiting a bar late at night. In making its decision, the district court found the officer credible, found that appellee crossed a lane line, and commented that it was obvious from the record that appellee was drunk and that he was glad the officer stopped appellee. Nevertheless, the district court also commented that case law supported a finding of reasonable articulable suspicion. Nevertheless, the district court concluded that the driving conduct was de minimis and that the stop was premature. This conclusion is in direct contradiction of this court's previous holdings in Susie and Cruz, recent decisions that state that departing from a lane line constitutes reasonable articulable suspicion to stop a motor vehicle.
What is the significance you mentioned in your initial comments of the fact, the time of day and the venue that the respondent was leaving? How important is that to our determination of the issues on appeal?
It's part of the totality of circumstances that would go to an officer's, what was available to the officer in making a determination whether to stop a vehicle or not. I think it clearly had an influence on the court, the district court, when it made its decision because it made those comments that it was glad that the officer had stopped appellee. But nevertheless, what I think the district court was primarily focused on was whether or not the stop was premature and whether or not the driving conduct was sufficient to make a stop late at night. So the district court made comments along the lines of, you know, it's obvious that you were drunk and you were leaving a bar late at night. Nevertheless, the conduct was de minimis, so I'm going to rescind the driver's license revocation.
Is this really just a question of law as to whether a district court's determination that the stop was premature or that the driver was distracted or the conduct was de minimis, any one of those things is a legitimate defense?
Yes, I would say that this is about the conclusions of law that the district court reached. Essentially, what appellant is arguing is that the facts that were both presented to the court and the district court found don't ultimately support its conclusion when applying this court's previous holdings in both Cruz and Sushi.
Is it significant that lanes aren't marked when you're in the middle of an intersection? Because as I understand the record here, the respondent you know, pulled out of the bar parking lot, was proceeding on this road, and then got to an intersection, and it was after crossing through the intersection that the officer noticed that the car had veered out of its lane or moved out of its lane, crossing the fog line. But when you're in an intersection, is there a fog line to cross?
When appellee went through the intersection isn't where the alleged violation occurred. It only occurred after he exited the intersection and then crossed the fog line thereof. The road in that area does sort of change shape, and the fog line does expand a little bit, and the fog lines don't extend through the intersection, but ultimately the violation occurred after the vehicle had traversed or nearly all the way traversed through the intersection.
He was over the fog line when he came out of the lot too, though, right? Even before he went in the intersection. At least my review of the video seems to indicate that.
That might be the case. I believe that the officer only testified about the lane line violation after exiting the intersection as being the reason for the stop. But if there was a lane line violation as he exited the parking lot and the officer had noticed that, it would be part of the totality of circumstances that would support a stop.
So should we be looking at just the, what should we be looking at? The comments that are on the record, but are just the written order? I mean, if we look at just the order, is it just paragraph 5 that would establish in your view? I mean, are you saying that the findings are there, but the conclusions of law are wrong?
I'm saying that the findings don't support the ultimate conclusion that the court reached. Ultimately, the district court did make its order on the record orally and then asked appellee's counsel to sort of memorialize its orders after the hearing. And then it did sign a written order, and appellant did not object to that written order. But I think even if you just look at what is in the written order, it doesn't support the conclusion. Furthermore, I would
and
say...
Is that because paragraph 5 necessarily shows that the car was not driven as nearly as practicable within a single lane?
Yes. Conclusion number 5 says that petitioner was over the fog line, but immediately corrected and traveled within his lane. I would also say that the written order can't necessarily be taken without the context that was given at the oral argument, particularly because there are some conclusions of law that are missing words and are necessarily require comments from the district court in making its findings to sort of understand what the court ultimately concluded. Conclusion number 3 says, therefore, the officer lacked a reasonable articulable suspicion to suspect petitioner was engaged in S motor vehicle. I'm not entirely sure what that means without understanding it within the context of what the district court ordered on the record.
Within that context, what does it mean?
Within that context, it means that the officer did not have reasonable articulable suspicion to suspect essentially that the driving conduct was de minimis, as in legally inconsequential, and therefore the officer did not have suspicion to stop appellee.
And your argument is that's contrary to the law, which provides in several cases that a violation of a traffic law, no matter how insignificant, does provide the requisite reasonable articulable suspicion?
Yes, Your Honor. As well as cases such as Sushi and Cruz, which I will repeatedly return to during argument today, where the driving conduct was less severe. In those cases, the driver merely grazed or touched a line, whereas in this case, the Pelly's vehicle fully crossed over the fog line, not just merely grazing, but his full passenger side tire went over the line.
And is that in coming back in off the shoulder? In other words, was he to the right and it comes back in when you're saying crossing once he gets past the intersection?
Yes. After he gets through the intersection, I believe his passenger side tire, front tire, is over the fog line and then corrects over into his lane upon exiting. The district court relied on 2 facts to ignore the clear precedent from this court. First, the district court reasoned that because appellee returned to his proper lane, it was not reasonable for the officer to suspect that he had committed a traffic violation. The commissioner is not aware of any case law, nor did appellee provide any case law to the district court supporting this alleged exception created by the district court. And any such exception would negate reasonable suspicion in many cases, as drivers who weave over lane lines regularly return to their lane or otherwise address their illegal conduct when in the presence of a peace officer. Second, the district court stated that appellee was distracted by the officer's squad car performing a U-turn after observing appellee leave a bar, and that the distraction contributed to respondent's fog line. The district court again cited no case law to support its conclusion that the driver's alleged distraction can negate an officer's reasonable suspicion of a traffic violation.
So what you're saying is the reason why the violation occurred doesn't matter when considering whether the violation provides reasonable articulable suspicion of violation of the law.
Essentially, yes. I believe this court has previously held in State v. Smith, it's an unpublished case from 2014, where a driver testified that he was driving on a center line because the road was narrow and windy and he was distracted by a squad car that was following him. And this court rejected that driver's argument because the officer did not force the driver off the road or otherwise precipitate the violation, as is the case here. If anything, a driver's inability to stay focused and be distracted by other cars on the road, that would contribute to a lane line violation. And officers aren't required to speculate as to why a driving conduct occurs. It was just objectively reasonable for the officer to make the stop after making the observations that the officer made. The question before the district court and this court is whether the officer's suspicion that appellee committed a traffic violation was reasonable. And based on this court's clear precedent, it was. The district court did not conclude that the officer precipitated or caused the traffic violation. It concluded that the driving conduct was de minimis and the stop was premature. And because Minnesota courts have continuously held that lane line violations provide sufficient reasonable articulable suspicion for a traffic stop, this court should reverse. I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You'll have 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Joseph G. Vaccaro. I represent the appellee in this matter, Daniel Siegfried. Quite simply, the court should defer to the trial court's findings here. This is a case where there's no clear error and there's no error of fact or law.
Which clear finding? I mean, sure. One of the findings is that he violated a traffic law. He went over the fog line.
Going over a fog line doesn't create necessarily a violation of the traffic law. The Minnesota statutes don't say that a driver can't graze a fog line or a lane line. What the statutes mandate is that a driver drive as practicably within their lane as possible. The case law cited by the commissioner all involves situations where the driver tendered no explanation that their touching of the line was practicable. Here, the court did find that there was a practicable reason to drive outside of the marked lanes.
But is that the standard? We're not looking at whether your client could be convicted of this traffic offense, whether that would have happened, but whether an officer objectively looks at that conduct and says, yeah, I mean, whether that provides an objective, reasonable, articulable suspicion of a potential violation, right? I mean, isn't that that's the problem I'm having with the district court's order here, because the findings are the findings that no one disputes, but it seems like the court focuses more on what the defenses to the traffic violation would be than whether reasonable suspicion existed.
I think the reason the court ruled the way it was is that this is a confusing intersection where the fog line isn't clearly established, where there's a curve in the road, where quite frankly, there's other explanations, reasonable explanations, for why a person would drive this way, and the immediate correction also would negate any inference of intoxication. That we're not talking about somebody just driving straight ahead unable to maintain a lane position, swerving within their lane. We're talking about someone driving forward, coming into contact with a fog line that didn't exist, and then immediately correcting. That's driving as close within your lane as practicable. That there is not a situation where just per se touching a lane line creates some sort of violation. That the officer has to analyze, again, the totality of the circumstances here. And the totality of the circumstances aren't the situations in the cases raised by the commissioner where there's no other explanation for touching the fog line, where someone's simply driving along on the road, not able to maintain a constant lane position, and clearly, unambiguously violating the statute. And so the court isn't bound then to say that per se you touch a fog line, you can be pulled over, because the statute doesn't say that, and the statute doesn't prohibit even the touching of fog lines. So
this is a crossing of fog line, right? I mean, you're not arguing with the findings of fact. You said they're not clearly erroneous. This isn't a touching. This is a crossing.
Certainly, a touching or a crossing. Neither are prohibited by the statute. The statute explicitly contemplates situations where an individual can touch or even cross a fog line and not be subject to a violation. Let's say, for example, an individual is driving on the highway and there's a wide load right next to them, and it's safer to drive completely over the fog line rather than risk clipping this wide load to give it an appropriate berth. There'd be no reasonable articulable suspicion there, because the reason why the driver crossed the fog line is obvious, that it's driving as practicable as possible within its lane and trying to be safe. In the same way here.
So now we're getting into an area where I'm having some principled difficulties with your argument, because it seems like you're arguing that the determination of whether an officer has reasonable articulable suspicion to stop someone is tied to the what's going on in the driver's head, which is something obviously that the officer has no knowledge of and has no ability to discern.
Certainly, but the officer does have knowledge of the conditions that the driver is experiencing.
There are no conditions on this road. I mean, there's no one else around. It's late at night. He's coming from a bar. When he comes out of the bar, he makes a wide turn into the fog line. Well, is swerving around, and
the officer didn't witness that wide turn. That wide turn is not the basis for the stop, so that shouldn't factor into our analysis here. But what the officer did know is that there is no fog line coming through this intersection. That he did correct immediately, and that reasonable articulable suspicion is not a per se test. It's a totality of the circumstances
test.
From
whose perspective? From a reasonable officer's perspective,
I would
right?
agree with that. And I think a reasonable officer would look at this intersection and say that there is no fog line going through the intersection. There is a curve here. There are other conditions that this driver is objectively experiencing that provide an explanation for why he may practicably not have driven within the lane.
And what's the legal authority that obligates an officer to consider the universe of possible reasons why someone might engage in a traffic violation? For purposes of stopping someone.
There's no legal authority that says the officer has to consider it, but what the legal authorities do say is that this court is to consider the totality of circumstances going on here. And so when we evaluate whether or not the officer had reasonable articulable suspicion, the court evaluates the totality of the circumstances, and here it's equally undisputed that the officer knew that the fog line didn't extend through the intersection, knew that the road turned, knew that the driver corrected. And so for that reason, like again, we are not talking about a situation, I think the district court makes it clear, where someone is driving along, it's bright out, it's a straight road, the lines are continuous throughout their course of travel, they go over or they graze, and there's no practical reason for them to have driven their vehicle in that manner. Here there is, and the district court sitting in the best position to find the facts of the case and to analyze the facts of what were going on, found that there was no reasonable articulable suspicion that the that Mr. Siegfried had failed to drive as practically within his lane as possible, and the deference that's accorded district court findings of fact should be applied here, and the district court should be upheld.
Why isn't this the circumstances of leaving a bar at 10 o'clock on a Friday night, coupled with the crossing over the fog line, sufficient to meet the standard for stopping the vehicle?
Again, the question before the court isn't whether they are, it's whether the totality of the circumstances were that. And the judge clearly looked at the totality of the circumstances and said he immediately corrected. There wasn't, the road curves, the fog line is not continuous. He analyzed the totality of the circumstances as was required and found that it didn't meet the standard here. And I would say that the reason for leaving a bar at night not satisfying that is that there's plenty of people who go to bars and don't drink. There's people who go to bars as designated drivers. And again, we're not talking about the whole universe that the officer needs to consider, but there's nothing about leaving a bar and not stumbling, not falling with your keys, not behaving in a way that shows you're intoxicated that gives rise to the idea that you as an individual have consumed alcohol in the bar. So there's no evidence prior to the stop that Mr. Siegfried had consumed alcohol or to infer that his presence at the bar somehow meant he had been consuming alcohol. That all comes after the stop, which was not supported by reasonable articulable suspicion.
So I completely appreciate the argument about what's practicable. Obviously, if there's a pedestrian in a lane, if there's a large load, et cetera, you wouldn't want someone to continue in your lane. You would want them to cross the fog line, right, out of safety, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But did the district court actually make findings that it was not practicable to drive within the lane? That's where why are the findings that the district court made, why do you read them as meaning it would not be practicable for him to drive within the lane, that it was not visible? I mean, I'm just not quite seeing that.
Sure. I mean, the district court knows the law. It knows the standard. It's delivering an opinion from the bench. It's not sitting down and picking all of its words. And the facts that the district court does identify are facts that go to the language of the statute, that go to the practicality of maintaining one's lane position in this situation. So that's where I'm drawing that conclusion from.
What do you make of the district court's statement that the officer is required to be a little more patient before you make these stops and put people through testing? What's the legal authority for that standard?
I think that's the officer that's the court commenting on what it felt was the totality of the circumstances. Again, a stop for reasonable articulable suspicion under Terry v. Ohio is based on the totality of the circumstances. It's not a factors test. It's a test where the court is free to pretty much consider anything that was happening on the night in question. So it's a very broad test, and I would submit that's why there is a body of case law that the commissioner is able to cite that upholds these stops with a great deal of regularity, because it's a totality of the circumstances test. It's a very fact-intensive test, and great deference is paid to the facts found by the trial court. And so if this case had gone the other way and we were appealing, I think we'd be stuck in that same position too. We would have had a judge that was in the best position to find the facts and to define the totality of the circumstances, and that would have been that. Because again, it's hard to show a clear error when the test that the court is to apply is one of totality of the circumstances.
But the clear error comes into reviewing the findings of fact. And I think that appellant's counsel argued here that the issue before this court is one of law, whether the facts as found by the district court.
It's a mixed question of fact and law. And so there's no, I would submit that there is no case that stands for the broad legal proposition that the commissioner's case rests on, which is that you simply cross a fog line, you touch a fog line, there's RAS, that's the end of our analysis, because that flies in the face of the case law that discusses reasonable articulable suspicion, that there is a totality of the circumstances test that is applied, and the statute itself at issue here doesn't create such a per se violation. And if there are no more questions, I guess I don't get to yield the remainder of my time, but I don't have anything more for you.
We'll take it. Thank you. And counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes.
I'd like to refocus this court's attention as to what is actually at issue here, and it's not whether or not it was practicable for appellee to exit his lane while driving through an intersection or not. It's whether or not the officer had reasonable articulable suspicion of a traffic violation that would allow an officer to make that stop. Whether or not it was practicable or not, I don't believe the district court made such a finding.
It matters in terms of defining what the alleged violation is, right? I mean, the alleged violation is that you're not driving as nearly as practical within a single lane. So, I mean, if an officer saw that it's impossible for that person to remain in their lane objectively and stop them, you know, there was like a herd of geese or something in there, and they move over, it would probably, I mean, that arguably would be lacking reasonable articulable suspicion to stop them if it's evident objectively that they couldn't be in that lane.
Perhaps, and that's not the issue. That's not what is at issue at this case. There wasn't any evidence presented to the district court that it was impractical for appellee to remain within his lane. The word practical net was never raised. What counsel argued to the district court was essentially Breckler, which was a single isolated swerve within a lane that did not commit a lane line violation, which I think goes to the district court's comments about the driving conduct being de minimis. I think that is ultimately...
Well, I think like the argument is that going through an intersection when it's not, the lane's not marked, and it's curving, et cetera, you get over on the other side, you see the fog line, now you immediately move in. That is essentially, I guess, determining that the person was driving practicably within the lane once they see, oh, here it is, let me scoot in.
To the extent that the district court did make a finding that it was impractical for appellee to remain within his lane, then I would challenge that fact-finding as erroneous because, number one, there was no issue or there was no evidence presented to the court. There wasn't a question on direct or cross about whether or not it was difficult for him to remain within his lane or notice the fog lines as he was driving. What was argued was this officer made a U-turn and that distracted the driver, and that's why the driver crossed over the fog line, which is essentially an argument that the conduct was not enough or was legally inconsequential. And I think this court's comments during appellee's arguments are especially pertinent, which is that officers aren't required to speculate as to why driving conduct occurs or what's going on within the mind of the driver when they observe the conduct. What this officer saw was somebody leaving a bar late at night, cross through an intersection.
Would a departure from a bar at 10 o'clock at night, standing alone, be sufficient grounds for a stop?
The mere fact of leaving a bar at 10 p.m. Would not allow an officer to stop somebody absent some other suspicion of criminal activity or other facts suggesting that criminal activity was occurring.
So in here, it's just the lane violation on top of those two facts.
Yes. Again, leaving the bar late at night is part of the totality of circumstances that the officer testified was relevant to her investigation before ultimately making the stop, but it was the lane line violation that was the actual criminal activity that led to the stop. And again, the district court didn't say that it was hard for appellee to stay within his lane or there was some obstruction in the lane that caused him to move out of his lane line to make this lane line violation. What the district court said multiple times at the hearing was it's de minimis, this behavior is legally inconsequential, and for that, the officer didn't have reason to stop. And again, officers aren't required to speculate as to why somebody makes a particular traffic violation, whether or not somebody is distracted or not. They don't know by the time they make the stop. What they see, as in this case, is an objectively reasonable facts to make a stop upon, which is somebody leaving a bar late at night, crossing over a lane line. And because this court has repeatedly held that that's enough to make a brief investigatory stop, this court should reverse the district court's order.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out within the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Everyone can remain seated. We're going to reconstitute the panel a little bit for the next argument.
Hannah?